Okay. So we'll do some meditations today, but to start us off, Nick. Nick's teaching some classes. What are you teaching?
Right now I'm teaching meditation at Casa Jardin. And probably pretty soon, Johnny O and I will start another ACI course in Scottsdale.
Okay, well, yeah, what's the ACI course you're teaching?
Two.
So Nick's teaching ACI course two at Casa Jardin and teaching meditation. So we're going to let him kick it off.
Never used one of these before.
Professional.
Oh, yeah.
Take care.
Thank you, Johnny. I feel like I'm in good hands.
You got the wrong shirt, dude.
I think it's... Yeah. It's right at my throat chakra. Good morning, everybody. So, well...
Did everybody turn their cell phones off?
I'll just start us off with some breath meditation. So yesterday Geshe-la was talking about the 8-point posture. I guess we didn't really get to it, but we talked about, most importantly, your back is straight. So maybe if it's not straight, straighten it. If your hips aren't higher than your knees, maybe slide to the front of your cushion. And just get yourself comfortable, most importantly. Let your mind settle. Close your eyes. Relax your legs. Let yourself be rooted down. Relax your torso, your shoulders. Your neck, your head. Relax your brow. Breathing through your nose. Bring your awareness to the tip of your nose. And with sharp focus, let your mind rest there and just pay attention to the breath as it goes in and out of your nose. Try to feel the warmest part of the breath as you exhale, and the coolest part as you inhale. And we'll try to count 10 cycles of breath. The exhale being the first part, the inhale being the second part. And exhale and inhale together being one breath. If you get distracted off the breath, don't worry. Just gently coax your mind back to the breath. And be happy that you realized you were off. Sharp focus on the breath. If you've gone off the object, just bring your mind back to the breath. Maintaining that sense of focus, you can just begin to deepen your breath. Maybe try to keep that deeper concentration with you. As you start to wake up the body, wiggle your fingers and toes. Just try to maintain that concentration even when you open your eyes and come back to the room. And when you're ready, open your eyes and come back to the room. So, I guess Ningpo's going to take back over, right?
So why do we do breath meditation?
Neutral.
Yeah, to bring the mind back to neutral, right? And why do we not make breath meditation the main object of our practice? Yeah, well, it's not necessarily right, it's not a virtuous object. So in the Tibetan tradition, they say if you meditate, you should meditate on a virtuous object, because then you're also planting seeds by thinking about something virtuous. Where if you just think about your breath, then that's not necessarily anything virtuous. But why do you think maybe the Theravadan tradition would emphasize breath meditation so much?
It relaxes the mind.
Yeah, but we don't really care about that. I mean, that's not so important. What else? Yeah, it's a little bit like Mahamudra meditation we did the other time, right? It's a very obvious object. Like, in the Tibetan tradition, you start by meditating on a Buddha, but then you have to learn what the Buddha looks like. You have to practice meditating on what he looks like. You have to think about how long his ears are, you know, and it's a little bit foreign. Or if you focus on your breath, that's obviously you're really familiar with that as an object. But just for the yoga people, maybe... Why would you meditate on your breath? What if I said Chidang Taplat Sorbe or Tapadang Da Nanshin? Would that make any sense to anybody? Nope. Okay. Here we go then. Let's talk about it. Yeah, there's a connection between the breath and the prana, right? Where your breath goes, as your prana flows, so flows your breath. So, right, if you're trying to do yoga and you're like, then what's going to happen? Well, you'll probably get hurt. Why? Wow, come on, come on. I know you know. Yeah, if your breath is choppy, that means your prana's moving in a choppy way. If your prana's moving in a choppy way, then probably what that'll manifest for you is you'll end up, you know, oh my God, my neck, where's the chiropractor? Right? Does yoga make you healthy?
Yeah. It's charged.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to say maybe, or it may be sometimes, right? If I take care of other people, help other people's health, then yoga will help me. But that's the why yoga works. How yoga works, right, is it affects your prana, how the prana flows in your body. So if you get your prana to flow smoothly, then you can direct it, like, say, for example, into your central channel. But if the prana's blocked or if the prana's choppy, then it's not going to go where you want it to, and you're not going to reach any of the... I mean, yoga won't do for you what you want it to do. So the breath is a relationship, right? That's why if you go to a good yoga class, the yoga teacher is going to tell you to use ujjayi breathing, right? Because there's a connection between the breath and the prana. So if your breathing gets out of joint, then your prana will too. So if the purpose of yoga is to direct and utilize your prana and move it in a way that makes you healthy and happy, then you also need to be aware of what you're doing with your breath. So if you meditate on your breath and you do it properly, then what you're also doing is affecting your prana. And then maybe that would be something you would want to do. The other thing I noticed with Theravadan people when I've gone to their meditations is eventually the breath isn't really the object anymore. What they do is they start teaching you about, like, where does the breath enter and exit your body? You know, is the breath part of your body or not? You know, and then what's the answer you're supposed to eventually come up with? What do you think? The Hindu tradition is the same way. They say, what's the self? What's the self? What's the self? We have to find out what's the self, right? What is the self? Let's talk about what the self. What do you think you're eventually supposed to figure out?
Can't find it.
Yeah, you can't find it. There is no self. The more you look for it, the less you're going to be able to find and identify as the self. So if you look and look and look at the breath, what are you eventually going to find?
No objective.
Yeah, it's empty. The breath is empty like everything else. So then I think over time, basically, the ones that I've gone to, then breath meditation metamorphosizes eventually into an emptiness meditation. And then, you know, would that be a good object?
Sure.
So, not to pick on anybody else's meditation practices, but like I said, just from our position, if you're going to meditate, you should meditate on something virtuous, because then you're also planting virtuous seeds. Any questions on that or anything in general? You can't meditate because you got this burning question in your mind and you can't sleep at night because you're like, what does it all mean? All right, then we'll just do the seven limbs. So when you're ready, take your comfortable cross-legged position, whatever works for you, something you can hold for a little while and you're not going to move. Because, right, we talked about last time, the most important thing when you do a group meditation is not to move. Maybe even above and beyond focusing on an object yourself, the most important thing is try not to move, because that's going to plant the seeds for you to not be disturbed in your meditation. And then we'll start back with the breath again. Close the eyes. Watch the breath. And I like what Nick said. You can try to, like we said the other time, there's different versions of breath meditations. So one is to sort of, you watch the breath and you kind of try to feel the quality of the breath. Is it warm? Is it moist? Is it cool? So you just put your mind at the tip of your nose and try to feel the quality of the air as it passes in and out through the nostrils. If you're maybe a little bit tired, because we've been going pretty hard the last week, and then a lot of class, a lot of information, get up early, go to bed late. So if you're starting to feel a little drowsy, a little sleepy, the major obstacle to meditation after you learn all the basics is going to be dullness. So if you start to feel tired, I'm really lucky I have a bright light shining in my face right now. So if you don't have that, then you just visualize one. So one of the antidotes to dullness in your meditation is to visualize something bright. So an easy one would be, so if you're meditating on the Buddha or on your teacher, you see the light shining from them, and then they say that the light coming from your object will brighten your meditation and help counteract the dullness or the tiredness that you might have. So we'll go ahead and go for refuge, which means today we'll say, call your lama to you. And you see your lama in there in front of you. And then, like we said, the most important thing is to recognize that they've actually come to help you. You're not just imagining them. If they are who we think they are, if they're an enlightened being, which is how we're supposed to think about them, then they have the capacity to sit in front of you and be anywhere at any time. So you ask them to come and they're there. And maybe you can, well, you should try to feel them, feel their presence. Maybe you can also smell them. Maybe you can hear their breathing. Like, try to make it a really lived, visceral experience. And then you should want to offer them something. You know, if you haven't seen them, for a while, then the first thought that should come to your mind is the desire to want to give them something. So Geshe Michael's talked a lot about different offerings you can make. So pick one and offer it. The reason we offer butter lamps on Tsongkhapa Day is because they say the seed of offering light is that you'll be able to spread the teaching. So maybe think about making your teacher some offering of light. Then to be in your lama's presence, you have to be pure. So if there's something you've done in the last 24 hours or so that you're embarrassed of, you did something that you knew you weren't supposed to do or weren't able to stop yourself from doing, then you would confess that so that you could get rid of it. So if you know the four powers, then you do the four powers. And the most important thing is this is not about guilt. It's about empowering yourself to be a different person. You can also think of this as an offering. You know, I offer my lama that part of me that I don't want to have anymore. There's a part of my mind that does things that I'm not proud of, and I don't want this, and so I give it to you. And then in case, again, we sort of, by mistake, depressed ourselves somehow doing that practice, then the next thing you would do is to balance that as you would rejoice. So think of something that you did. Again, maybe it's best, think of something in the last 24 hours, something nice you did for somebody else, some nice thought you had in your mind, some maybe appreciation you had for someone else, and then you just try and have some joy that you're smart enough to do those things. We're so often discouraged to do virtuous things. So if you've done some virtue, then just try and be happy about it. And if you're doing it correctly, like a small, maybe in the corners of your mouth, they start to pull upwards a little bit. And then the books say, if you think about something good you saw someone else do, then you get a 10% bonus. So think about maybe, like we said the other day, there's so many people running around right here, right now, trying to help everyone and make this event go well. So think about someone you saw and just be happy for them and happy in what you saw them do. And then, to close up, you ask your teacher to keep teaching you. And then maybe sometimes it's good to think that your teacher doesn't always teach you by explaining things to you. Maybe your teacher teaches you maybe the most powerful way they teach you is by being an example or by showing you something, how they act, how they behave. So ask them to keep teaching you in that way, maybe. And again, like I said, I have this suspicion that I miss a lot of those kinds of teachings, that those teachings go past me and I don't see the teaching. So then I ask my teacher to bless me so that I catch the teaching. That when the teaching happens, I'm aware of it as a teaching. And then I have the capacity to see the teaching and notice the teaching and then somehow not put it into my life. So then I also ask my teacher to bless me so that if I catch the teaching and I am aware of the teaching, then I also am able to practice the teaching myself. And so then you ask the teacher to stay in your life. So they get smaller and smaller and smaller until they're the size of, well, as small as you can imagine them and still see them clearly. And they rise to the level of your forehead. And then they come towards you and then they face the same direction as you are, sitting on the top of your head. And then again, maybe you can feel them there. Maybe you feel some weight, little small weight pressing down, or you feel warmth from where they're resting on the top of your head. And then they come down through your central channel until they're resting at your heart. And then as you go through your day, if you feel stressed or worried or anxious about something, then you can remember that they're sitting there at your heart, ready to help you if you need help. Good. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes, stretch a little bit,
twist to the left,
twist to the right. Drink something. Any questions about that? Does everybody know the onion thing? Raise your hand if you have not. When I say onion thing, you have no clue what I'm talking about. Okay, that's enough. Yeah, we used to teach this thing on the Heart Yoga Tour. They taught it all the time. They call it onion skin theory. So I don't have my board, otherwise I would draw you an onion.
So there's no borders. You have to visualize, use your new meditation powers to visualize an onion. And so what's the outside layer of the onion? Yeah, the body. All right. So to put it back in context, we were talking about yoga and breath and meditation. So I thought maybe we'd talk about that a little bit more. So they say, how's the we say, right? I talked about yesterday in the logic class. We say I didn't get to it actually. We didn't talk about it in the logic class, but I was planning to get to it. The body and the mind are mutually exclusive. What's the definition of mutually exclusive?
Can't exist together.
Yeah, to be one is to not be the other. To be one is automatically to not be the other, right? So what was the example? Who remembers? Yeah, good, red and white, right? Show me something which is red, and I'll show you something which is not white, right? Show me something which is white, I'll show you something which is not red. To be one is to automatically not be the other. So we say that's the relationship between the body and the mind. If you show me something which is a thought, I'll show you something which is not physical, right? If you show me some piece of your body, I'll show you something which is not mental, right? So to be one is to automatically not be the other. Well, okay, that's fine and dandy, but if that's true, then how do the mind and the body relate to each other? You know, because we know that, right? If you drink a bunch of tequila, right, it has a effect on your mind. Your mind starts to do weird things that it wouldn't ordinarily do, right? So we know there must be some relationship between the body and the mind. So if the body and the mind are contradictory, right, then how is it that they affect each other? So there's a why and there's a how. We'll talk about the how, right? And so the how is onion skin theory. So how yoga works, right? So when you do yoga, what are you doing? You're working with your body. So why would you do that? Because there's a relationship between the body and the mind. Okay, so we peel off the outside layer of the onion. That's the body, right? We all understand that one. What's the next layer?
Breath.
Yeah, good, breath. So the onion goes from gross to subtle. So the very center of the onion will be the most subtle thing, and then the outside of the onion will be the grosser thing. So the grossest thing is the body. So we peel that layer of the onion off. That brings us to the next layer of the onion. What's that? That's breath. So we were talking about that, right? There's a connection between the breath and the body. If you're, when you're doing your yoga, what's going to happen to your body? You'll get hurt, right? So that's the relationship. Or in the same way, if you do something to your body that you shouldn't, like, for example, push yourself too hard in yoga class, what happens to your breath? See? So there's a relationship between those two that goes like that, right? So then we have the body, peel that off, then we have the breath, peel that off. What's the next one?
Prana.
Good. Awesome. Right? So this is why we talk about prana when you're doing yoga, because, again, so now all three of these are related. What you do with your body affects what happens to your breath, affects what happens to your prana. How your prana is flowing affects how you breathe, affects what happens to your body. Right? So then we peel that one off. Peel the body off, peel the breath off, peel the prana off. What's next? Yeah, good. So then we say this is the connection. So this is how they're related. This is the how again, not the why, right? What's the why? Seeds, yeah. See, that's the secret answer. When I ask you a question, you say seeds, you're going to be right. Okay. So seeds is the next, or I'm sorry, thoughts and then seeds. I'm skipping ahead of myself, sorry. So how do the thoughts affect the breath, which affects the body, which affects the prana, right? So I'm doing my yoga. I'm in a headstand. And I'm struggling, right? I don't like headstand. I wobble around. I feel like I'm going to fall on my back. It makes me nervous. And I look over the person next to me, and they're like straight as a board, right? What do I think? Yeah, what a jerk. Why can he do that? You know, I should be able to do that, right? So then what happens to your prana? You make a knot, right? Your prana can't flow. You block the prana. Then what happens to your breath? Yeah, then what happens to your body? Ow, my neck. Where's the chiropractor? All right, so the goal of yoga, like if you started with yoga, the goal of yoga is you do your asana and you do your ujjayi breathing, which makes your prana flow smoothly, which then, how do you feel when you come out of yoga class? You feel great, right? You're like, oh, can I help you? You know, what do you want to do now? Right, let's go do something together, right? Because the asana practice is affecting the breath. The breath is flowing smoothly, which makes the prana flow smoothly, which makes the thoughts kind. You want to help somebody. You feel good. You feel happy. You feel kind. You want to help people, right? Go in the other direction. So, well, we already did it, right? He's a jerk. Then my prana gets a knot, and the breath starts to get choppy, and the body gets hurt. Or I look over the person, right, doing headstand. I'm like, wow, they look really great. Like, they're doing a really awesome headstand. Then what happens? Prana flows smooth. Breath is good. What's your asana going to do? It's going to be better. Yeah, your pose is going to look better. All right. Then what's the very, well, what's so? Peel off the body, peel off the breath. Thank you. Peel off the prana. Peel off the thoughts. What's next? I already said, yeah, seeds, right? So your thoughts plant a seed. That's why we're always talking about seeds. So your thoughts plant a seed. So if I look over the person next to me and I go, wow, they look really great. They have a really great practice. Then that plants a seed, right? And then that seed's going to ripen as me having, you know, more good thoughts. Wow, these people, it's amazing. These people are doing yoga. They look really great. It's so great more people are doing yoga, right? Which then makes the prana flow smooth, which then makes your breath nice, which then makes your asana get better. And then you can figure out for yourself, conversely. All right, then there's one more sometimes we add. What's the last one? Yeah, emptiness. Yeah, we'll say even more subtle, right, than seeds is the fact that seeds work because things are empty. So sometimes we'll... Actually, right, if you peel away an onion, what's in the very center? Yeah, a little empty space. Yeah, a little empty space. So the onion analogy works really well. So because things aren't coming from their own side, you can plant a seed, which will make you have a kind thought, which will make your prana smooth, which will make your breath nice, which will make you have a good asana practice. Okay. Questions?
I have a question.
Sure.
Yeah. So the only purpose of the ujjayi breath is to physically help you steady your breath?
The only purpose.
I'm just wondering what's the purpose of ujjayi breath.
Oh, yeah, just to make your breath smoother.
So you can control it better when you're doing it?
Yeah, so it's deeper and smoother. What do you mean?
I'm just thinking about, like, is there more onion, or is there just, like, that onion? I'm thinking the whole world looks like an onion now.
Yeah. Like, no, actually, sometimes Geshe Michael will say that. You can add another layer on the outside, because in the Yoga Sutra, right, it says I can't remember which side's... Let's say the west side highway is your left side channel, and what's the one on the east side? FDR is your right side channel. So they say that, right, in yoga, that your what happened first in your body was your channels actually form first, and then the same way, like on a tree, if you ice forms in layers, you know, like it snows or rains or something, and then the water freezes on the limb, and then it gets like a coat on it, and then if it rains again, then it gets another coat like that. They say the body forms in the same way. So your channels first open, and then your body starts to form around your channels. But if you want, they say you can keep going farther, that actually your outer world is also a reflection of your channels. So, like, for example, if you're driving on the expressway and the traffic is really bad, then you could think to yourself, there's a block somewhere in my prana, and that's why I'm seeing this. That's why I'm forced to see, like, all this traffic and congestion right now. So, yeah, if you wanted to add another layer on the outside, you could say the world. After your body, you could say the world is a reflection of your prana and how it moves. And I'm sure if I thought about it long enough, I could make up another one, but... Anyway. Okay, let's do one more. Try to squeeze in one more meditation. I thought today, because we did the Mahamudra meditation the other day, then I thought today we would do the Golden Room meditation. So I think that one's also really useful. So take your comfortable cross-legged position. Close the eyes. Clear everything out. And then, again, then watch the breath as it passes in and out of the nose. And then, like we've talked about, as it comes in, it should feel a little bit drier. As it goes out, it should feel a little bit more moist. See if you can detect that, if you can notice that in your breath. And then you picture what Geshe Michael calls the golden room. So it could be a room anywhere, but it should be filled with light. So that's what makes it golden. There's different rooms you can picture, different ways you can do it. You can imagine the most like beautiful room that you could possibly imagine. Maybe it's all made out of light and diamond and crystal and, you know, or maybe the most expensive hotel room you ever stayed in. You could imagine that, just the most beautiful room you could possibly conceive of. Or another way you could do it is you imagine the place where you first met your lama and remember what that place was like and visualize that as a beautiful room full of light. And the weather outside is perfect, so maybe the windows are open and there's a gentle breeze coming in through the window with all the light, filling the room, making it bright, golden. And then, again, your lama is there. You ask them to come and meditate with you, and so they're there in front of you in the golden room. And again, maybe you can smell the perfume coming from the body, the result of their ethical behavior. just being with them in this place is a blessing for you. You might start to feel how being with them in this place is blessing your channels. You might feel how their breath is your breath is their breath. How their body could bless your body. And how if they could do that, they could have some power to affect your seeds. And understanding all that, you would ask them to stay with you. So again, you see them come into your heart. and then they're there with you for the rest of your day. If you notice some nice thing happening during your day, you can make an offering of it to them as they sit there in your heart. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Twist, stretch. Okay, 2 minutes for questions. Any questions about that? Yeah, I mean, crying is good because it probably indicates that like there's some opening happening in your heart, and that's obviously a really good thing. But yeah, if it makes you more conscious of your body, then that's a distraction. So, it's okay. But try not to let it distract you too much. Try to not let it be a distraction. Maybe just think about how when you've that feeling you're having in your heart, that's an opening and that's what you're after, you know, and maybe focus on that, and hopefully that could maybe help you ignore the other physical parts of it. Yeah, sure. Ideally, right, everyone is the teacher. You know, I mean, there's different ways you can think about it, I think, if that's, like, bothering you a little bit. You know, like, ideally, the plan is you're supposed to think about your lama as a Buddha, right? Because, theoretically, your lama is supposed to be the closest one for you and your world to what a Buddha should be like. But the idea is that practice then should start to bleed out to other people. So anyone you, like... You know, I did talk about that in yoga class yesterday, right? You're not supposed to judge people. And the reason why you shouldn't judge people is because you don't know what their motivation is. So really, it's possible that everybody in this room is already a Buddha and I'm the only one that's not. There's no way I can prove that that's not the case because I don't know what anyone else is thinking. I don't know what anyone else's mental experience is. So, you know, what helps me is to think about if your lama is the Buddha, then your lama can manifest as anyone they want, which means they could be anyone else around you. You know? So when you sit in the golden room, you don't necessarily have to visualize your teacher if you don't want to. You could visualize anyone you want and see them as your teacher. Like, for example, you're fighting with your mom, so you visualize your mom sitting in front of you and you think, there's no proof that I have that my mother is not an emanation of my lama. And so I visualize my mother sitting in front of me, and she is my lama, and do the meditation that way. Conversely, you could go the other direction. You could say, your lama is supposed to be a Buddha. So if your lama is a Buddha, then they sit in enlightened Buddha paradise somewhere. And if they sit in enlightened Buddha paradise somewhere, they don't have a body made out of flesh and blood. Like, you can't sit in a Buddha paradise with a body like this. So visualize what your lama looks like in their Buddha paradise, which light might look like what Tara looks like or what Chenrezig looks like. And you could do the meditation that way. And so you visualize Chenrezig or Tara sitting in front of you and you think, this is my lama and I'm meditating with them. And then I think those kind of things, like, so instead of getting so, like, thinking your lama is this physical person that you have to, you know, meditate on. You could meditate on some different aspect of your lama, some other way your lama appears to you. And then I think that would loosen your... Because the bodhisattva vow is about, you know... I mean, a teaching can come from anybody. That's what, like, I try to talk about a little bit in the Seven Limb Prayer. You know? Like, I always... Like, I say my... You know, a lot of what I learned about from compassion, I learned from my dog. You know? He was always happy to see me. He didn't care what I did to him. He still loved me anyway. You know? And he just wanted me to be happy. You know? Like, I've hardly met a person like that. To be totally honest. So, you know, then I think to myself, so who was my dog if my dog, like, gave me an example of someone who could be compassionate and loving all the time? You know, then who was my dog? Like, was he just a dog? Like, logically, I want to say he couldn't have been. You know, so maybe sit in the golden room with your dog. I did that, actually. I'm going over now a little bit. I should stop. But I was really into martial arts in college. And I took a self-defense class, and he said, he made us do a meditation in one of the classes, and he said, you sit in a field, which it was totally a golden room meditation. Instead of sitting in a room, I was sitting in a field. And he said, imagine sit with a person who makes you feel comfortable. You know, the person that makes you feel safe. And I was like, well, the person, if I use the Tibetan definition, that makes me feel safe was my dog. Because he was, like, always there for me. He was always, like, you know. I lived in a bad neighborhood also, so he was, like our house never got broken into because this big, mean dog in the house. So, like, for me, he was a protector, you know. So, like, sit in the room with your dog, you know. And he is your teacher, you know, because he's teaching you. Does that answer your question? Okay. All right. Gracias.